but everything. Okay, so F0, 0 is of course 0 because this is anti-symmetric, an anti-symmetric tensor. So this has no zero component. Pi 0 is 0. And the other components are then minus F0i. And then, of course, if you use the definition, you can show that this is 0 and minus Vi dot minus, no, sorry, plus del I V0. Yeah, okay. This is for I equals x, y, z, or 1, 2, 3. Now we do this trick with co and contravariant indices. This is 0. And then this is plus V vector dot. No? If I raise this covariant spatial index, it's to get the true x, y, and z component of this vector, this vector, then there is a change in sign. But here it's not, because this is actually really d by d xi. Okay, this is the correct component. So this is then plus gradient v0. Or v upper 0. There's no change in the time component. No? And this thing here I define this as minus pi vector. This is just a definition. Why? Why minus? Yeah, because what I've written down here are, in principle, these covariant indices, ne? Lower I. And they should be minus pi upper I. Ne? So pi upper I is basically then the correct three-dimensional vector, but in a covariant notation, the spatial component should have a minus sign. Okay? So we have to remember that this is minus pi vector. Okay, good. So this here tells you already that V0 is a cyclic variable. No? If there is no canonically conjugate, if there is no momentum variable, in this fact, no canonically conjugate field, the associated field, V0, is not dynamic. No? So it's, in mechanics we call this cyclic variable. Okay, and that means also that the field V mu has only three independent components. No? V mu has three independent components, not four. Okay, good. So one of the components is unphysical, and one has to eliminate this. Right? Because in the partition function, as a functional integral, you only integrate over physical variables. This was always the iron rule of functional integrals. Only integrate over physical variables. Remember the discussion in quantum field theory when we computed the generating functional for electrodynamics or quantum electrodynamics or any Young-Mills theory, where you actually only have two independent components. There was a lot of mathematical overhead to get rid of two of the components of A mu or V mu in this case, the vector field. And here, the overhead is a little bit less because you only have to eliminate one of the components, not two. So there is no integration over, you don't factor out the integration over gauge orbits and stuff. You have just to make sure that you eliminate the V0 properly. Okay. So eliminate the dependent component. And of course, this is V0. And I will show you why this is so. First of all, if you take another divergence of the equation of motion, you can actually see, you can derive a condition which relates the components of v mu with each other. So if I insert this equation of motion now, I get, I mean, this form of the equations of motion, I get this here. And you see this term and this term cancel, and you just get m squared del dot v. Or in other words, because m squared is not zero, del dot v must be zero. And if you write this out, this is dt v0 plus three divergence v equals to zero. And it's clear that, that in principle, you could eliminate v0 by a time integration over the three divergence of v. This is also what we discussed in the quantum electrodynamics, or let's say in the for the electromagnetic field, the quantum theory of the electromagnetic field. We did this, and we called this then a completely fixed gauge. And that would be a possibility, but it makes the rest of the calculation a little bit more cumbersome. So that is not the most elegant way to do it. More elegant is to really use the equation of motion directly, not the four divergence of the equation of motion. So the alternative is I use the zeroth component of the equation of motion itself. If you write this equation of motion up there, and if you then use the fact that f mu upper 0 is minus f 0 mu, which is plus f 0 mu, which is minus f mu 0. Naja, okay, this is just raising and lowering indices. But you will actually see that this here, minus f 0 mu, was this vector here. So plus f 0 mu is plus pi. So this is just minus three divergence of pi. So the smart way to eliminate v0 is to use this equation, minus 1 over m squared, 3 divergence pi. This is the crucial step in this derivation. Okay, and then the last thing you did on Tuesday was to write down the Hamilton density, or to derive this. So that was a little calculation, which I will now repeat a little bit in more detail, because I think this is where Arno was not so explicit. No? He was a little quick. He told me he was a little quick on this, so I should repeat this, or not. No, it was okay. Okay, then we can be brief. Okay, so Legendre transform of the time derivatives of v mu. Those will be replaced by the canonically conjugate field. Of course, this means, so the right-hand side is understood in the sense that all time derivatives of v mu have to be eliminated. And the time derivatives of v vector are easy to eliminate or replace in terms of pi. You just use this relation here. There's a v vector dot. So you solve this for v vector dot. So it's minus pi minus gradient v0. And v0 dot. No, sorry. There is no v0 dot, of course, because v0 dot would be multiplied with pi 0. Pi 0 is 0. And of course, in f mu nu, there is never any v0 dot, never any time derivative of v0. There's only spatial derivatives of v0 or time derivatives of v vector. However, this v0 is also not an independent variable. I have to replace this with this expression here. So wherever there is a v0 here in this expression, I have to replace this by the physical degrees of freedom, by pi vector, and more precisely by the three divergence of pi vector. And then if you use this up here, this is actually minus pi plus 1 over m squared, ne, so losing this here, plus 1 over m squared, gradient of divergence pi. Okay, so now we have it. Now we just plug it in and compute. Okay, so what is this here now? So this is a standard Minkowski notation for a scalar product. But the zero of component vanishes. So I just get the spatial components, which are minus pi vector dotted into a time derivative of v vector. And then the minus because of this Minkowski notation. Okay. And then, yeah, minus L0. And L0 was, yeah, what is this? Remember that minus a quarter f mu nu, when you compute all this, then this is 1/2 e squared minus b squared, no? When you replace this by electric and magnetic field strengths. This is what you compute in standard electrodynamics. And we have done this many times, of course. And the E is minus gradient V0 minus V vector dot. Aha. But that is, of course, pi, no? Plus pi. Okay. So, minus 1/2, so minus because minus L0, minus pi squared, minus b squared, and then the mass term, minus m squared over 2. Okay, and then there is v mu squared, which is v0 squared minus v vector squared. And v0 squared, of course, I have to also replace by this expression here. So this here will be plus 1 over m to the 4, divergence pi squared, when you do the replacement correctly. Okay. And this v vector here is minus pi plus 1 over m squared gradient of divergence pi. Okay. Good. Then you plug it all in. Ah, sorry. Okay, and then you see there's a term, minus pi dot gradient of divergence pi. And this was basically replaced by a surface term. And then since in the exponent of the partition function, there's always space-time integral over h0. So you can do a integration by parts. So I will get a term minus pi dot, okay, 1 over m squared, gradient of divergence of pi, which can be written as minus 1 over m squared, divergence of pi times divergence pi. Okay, so now there's too much here. Né? According to the product rule, only this nabla should only act on divergence pi, not on pi. So what I did too much here, I have to subtract again. Well, in this case, because there's a minus sign, I have to add this again. So there's an extra term, divergence pi times divergence pi. So now this is an identity. And this term will be, this is a divergence under the integral, under a spatial integral, d3x integral. So according to Gauss' theorem, this is a surface term. But surface terms, of course, at surface at infinity, you assume that all terms vanish. Okay. So this here. It's a surface term that can be neglected. Okay. So what I really have here, then in the partition function, or in the Hamiltonian first, Hamilton density, it's minus pi dot minus pi, is as plus pi dot pi. And then from this part, I get a plus 1 over m squared divergence pi squared. Okay. And then I get minus 1 half pi squared. So that reduces the pi dot pi by a factor of 1 half. Plus 1 half b squared. This is this guy here. Okay, plus, let's take this one first, m squared over 2 v squared. And then there's this last term here. No? This is, minus 1 over 2 m squared, no? M squared over m to the fourth, divergence pi squared. This reduces this term by a factor of 2. No? This is exactly this term with a factor minus 1 half. Okay, so the Hamilton density is 1 half pi squared plus 1 over m squared divergence pi squared plus b squared plus m squared v squared. Okay, sorry that I put it all on one board now, but this is the final result. I think this, has he written this down or not? No, this he has not written down. Okay, maybe then I should have been a little bit more generous with the space. But you can follow the steps, no? Is clear? Sounds good, no? Okay. So then, the new thing is now partition function. Okay, z naught. Naught is always because non-interacting. Eh? So there's a normalization constant. I still have not found a good symbol for this, because script n was always a charge density, so let's not use that. Okay, and then it's an integral over periodic fields. Remember that we can also take the canonically conjugate fields to be periodic, because there's no restriction on the last point of the imaginary time interval. So I can always impose this restriction, which simplifies the calculations. Okay, then it's I only integrate over physical fields. In this case, the three components of V vector. Those are the physical independent components and the associated canonically conjugate fields, pi vector. Okay, and then it's an exponential. Okay, here the shorthand notation for the imaginary time. I think this was introduced. No? He used this integral x. No? I already introduced this. Sorry, this was without I. So 0 to 1 over t d tau integration over volume d3x. No? I think we introduced this symbol, if I remember. It's some time ago, but okay. Okay, and then, okay, now you have pi times time derivative of the field. Pi was the canonically conjugate field. What is the canonically conjugate field to V vector? What is this? We would say pi, but actually it's minus pi, no? Because the canonically conjugate field to V upper index is pi lower index. right? Because remember, no? I have it, I just wiped it. Okay. No? So dl by dvi dot. If you, this is Vi is the field, and the canonically conjugate field is this one here. But this has a lower index because it's an upper index in the denominator. No? This is pi lower I, which is minus pi upper I. But this is pi upper I is the component, are the components of pi vector. No? That's why there is this minus sign here. Okay? Good. Okay. Minus H naught. There's no charge in this case. No? There's no U1 symmetry in this Lagrangian. There's no charge I have to account for. Yeah, in principle, this could be done. You could basically have charges of, so some of the components could be particles and antiparticles with respect to each other. But in principle, that you could try to gauge this with under the electromagnetic interaction and then identify an electromagnetic charge density, and then you could also try to conserve this. It's possible, but let's keep things simple at this point, okay? In principle, you can do it, but let's keep things simple at this point. So no charge. I assume assume zero charge. So also then the associated chemical potential would be zero. Okay. This is complicated as it is. If you like, you can extend this whole thing. I mean, if you're really ambitious and think I don't give you enough homework exercises, then just include the charge if you like. Okay. Good. So this is what we have to do. We have to insert this guy here and then compute. And of course, it's always advantageous to do the calculation in this space of Fourier components. No? So we do a Fourier decomposition. And of course, we use the results from the scalar case. No? So this guy, so the scalar fields had this normalization factor here, no? This 1 over square root of TV. And we clarified why this is the right thing to do. No? Some simplest possible way to normalize them. Okay, then there's the Fourier sum over Matsubara frequencies and momenta, and I write this as a discrete sum because, remember, we said, okay, let's first fix the volume, okay, and then count the momentum modes as the standing waves between between opposite walls. And then everything was discretized. And later on, you can, of course, take the thermodynamic limit. V goes to infinity, then the momentum integral becomes, the momentum sum becomes an integral in the standard way, and we already clarified how to do this. Don't need to discuss this now. The sum over the zeroth component is always a Matsubara sum. So there is never any limit, any continuum limit in the sense, because it's always a finite interval over which you integrate. At any finite t, of course, if you send t to zero, then this becomes infinity, and this is basically an infinite interval over which you integrate, then, of course, the Matsubara sum would become an integral over the energy. But here, at any non-zero t, it's just a Fourier sum, no? Matsubara sum. Okay. Then you have the exponential factor. Of course, in our pseudo-Minkowski notation, this looks very simple. Yes. What you always see in zero-temperature quantum field theory. But remember, the time component here is imaginary. No? This is I times the Matsubara frequency, or minus I, depending on how you define it. And the time is I times Euclidean time. No? Okay. Okay, and then we had, okay, this is a vector, a three-vector. The Fourier components are also three vectors in space. And then, of course, indices for the discrete Matsubara frequencies and the discrete momenta So this index k is always the notation I like to use. Okay, this was, of course, you are used to this. Okay, and then also for pi, I do the same with a different normalization factor because the dimension is, of course, energy squared, né? Just as in the scalar case also, né? As in the scalar case. Okay. Good. So then we plug it in. Yeah, we plug it in into this expression up there and write everything in Fourier space. Okay, so Z0, then, yeah, okay, there is certainly some normalization constant, and yeah, we'll have to worry about this. This is maybe a little bit different from the one that is employed up there because there are some factors here, né, that will have to be taken into account in the Jacobian of this variable transformation. We don't need to do this because we already know what's going on. There will be, everything will combine and will maybe give a factor volume or whatever to the number, to a power which equals the number of space-time points in the discretized version, but then you send, you take the, you don't take the thermodynamic limit, but the continuum limit, and of course there's an infinite constant which you don't worry about. Okay. If this goes on, I will have to close the door, but looks good. Okay, so there's a normalization. Okay, and then we have integration over the Fourier components of pi and the Fourier components of v. Okay, this is clear. This is the same as we had it before. So now, then what do we have in the exponent? We have everything, since this is a non-interacting system, there will always be two powers of fields multiplied with each other. There will be pi times v dot, or there will be pi squared or so. So I will always get two sums over the momenta. Okay, let's write them as a sum over q and k, as usual. Okay, and then I will have a space-time integral over the product of two of these factors, one with q and one with k. Okay, this is also well known. We have the same thing in the scalar case. Okay. And then I will pull out from the remainder, I will pull out a factor of temperature over volume. Okay, how does this come about? Because pi times pi is indeed this factor, t over v, né? Without the square root. No? Pi squared has precisely the t over v factor. Good. Pi scalar product v dot has also a factor 1 over volume, but the factors of t will cancel, and I will take this into account, the appropriate factors of powers of temperature or inverse temperature I will take into account when I write down the rest. But I will pull out a t over v from everything. Okay, and now I start to write what I have up there, pi dot v dot, and also the h0 I will write in Fourier components. Okay, so what do we have here? So I have minus, okay, the q is supposed to be the variable of pi, and then v dot. Okay, dot means derivative with respect to t. The dot is the t derivative. But remember, t is in real life, it's actually I, or minus I times tau, okay? So there's always, if you want to convert this into tau and stuff, you can do this. It makes everything look a little bit more ugly. So this pseudo-Minkowski notation has an advantage. We just keep this in mind. We can just go ahead and do what we are used to. Yeah? Because a t derivative pulls down a factor minus I times k0. Okay, upper or lower doesn't matter. This is actually an omega n, né? Minus I k0 is actually an omega n factor, but we can keep this notation, no problem. And the only thing I still have to take into account is that in the product, the product of pi dot v dot, the normalization factors, the t under the square root and the 1 over t under the square root, they cancel. But I have pulled out a factor of t, so I have to divide by one factor of t. And then it's just vk. right? That was the V dot written in Fourier space. Clear? Yeah, okay, good. So now the rest is,
So we have a T derivative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, okay, so, okay, my notation, yeah, yeah, okay, okay, let me go back to the definition, and then I just need to see whether I have the sign correctly when we did this. So, so if everything is correct, IT was tau, no? I think this was how we defined this.
Okay. Yeah.
So, so this V dot here means actually it's d by dt V, yeah, okay, which is I d by d tau V. Yeah. But since I don't like to account for all the I's and minus I's floating around, which you can do if you like, I just keep this pseudo Minkowski notation with a T, keeping in mind that T is always minus I tau. Yeah? This I just keep in mind. But I use this synonymously. There's no analytic continuation or stuff. T is just minus I tau, equal minus I tau. So T is imaginary, tau is real. Yeah? But I can keep this notation just, you know, until the end of the calculation and doesn't make any difference. No? If you don't like it, then okay, then you can translate it, but there's no harm done. I mean, it's just another variable. There's no analytic continuation involved or so. It's just another variable, an imaginary variable. I found it convenient because it looks as if I would compute at zero temperature in real time. Yeah? But of course, it's not what I'm doing. It's just a variable transformation. Okay. Good. So it's H0. I have to pull it up. So this starts with pi squared. Ne? So minus 1/2 pi squared. So pi squared is, of course, in Fourier space pi q dot pi k. And all the factors are correct. Ne? The t over v square root times 2 is just the t over v that I pulled out. So that's good. Okay, then comes this interesting factor here. 1 over m squared, divergence pi. Divergence means just a factor of plus iq. This is the standard k0 t minus k vector dot x. So plus ik, derivative with respect to x means plus ik will be pulled from the exponential. Okay, so I get plus 1 over 2 m squared, because I have two factors of I. When I take the derivative here, this divergence gets two factors of I. But one is k and one is q. One time the momentum is k, one time it is q. So I get pi q vector dotted into q. This is the one power of the divergence of pi in space. And then pi k. Sorry. I revert the order k dot pi k. Yeah? So this was basically the divergence of pi in Fourier space. Yeah? One time with the variable q, one time with the variable k. And the two factors of I flip the sign here. Hmm? Clear? No, this was this factor here, this term.
Why is the order important?
No, it's not important. You'll see in a second that doesn't matter. Just notational convenience. Okay, so then I have, let's first take the mass term, m squared v squared. This is very simple. This is minus because of minus h0, m squared over 2, v, q, dot vk. Yeah. Except, of course, that the v's are normalized differently. They are not, they are 1 over tv, not t over v. So I have two powers of t which I have to account for in the denominator, m squared over t squared. Which is also clear when you think about this, because these definitions here, these normalization constants, are always chosen so that the Fourier modes are dimensionless. So whenever I write something down, everything in the square brackets must be dimensionless. Yeah, it's true. This is dimensionless, this is dimensionless. K0 over T is dimensionless. Energy over temperature is also dimensionless. Okay, this is dimensionless. The two powers of momenta are cancelled by two powers of mass in the dimensionality. It's also dimensionless, and also here. M over T is also dimensionless. Okay, and the last thing is the B squared. Okay, now this we have to go back a little bit. What is B squared? Okay, so B squared. B, of course, there are some gradients or spatial derivatives of V. Because B squared is, okay, BI, BI. And BI is minus 1/2, so it's a quarter, epsilon IJK, FJK, times epsilon ILM. FLM. Okay? Or if you then use this fantastic formula for contraction of epsilon tensors in terms of delta functions, it's a quarter delta JL delta KM minus. My phone is not up. Delta JM delta KL. FJK FLM. Okay, and then you just work it out. So the J becomes an L, or sorry, the L becomes a J, the M becomes a K. So that's a quarter FJK FJK minus the same with one pair of indices in the reverse order. So in this case, L becomes K and M becomes J. But since F is antisymmetric, it's the same. It's twice the same. So it's 1/2 FJK FJK. It's also clear when you consider the B. Okay. And then you just plug it in. So, so this is 1/2. Sorry about this here, but so this is basically del J VK minus del J VK. Sorry, del K VJ times the same again. Del J VK minus del K VJ. Okay? And okay, the last step is to revert this into a form where the indices are all in the right place. And if I square this out, I see that this minus this term is the same as this term twice. Because this is antisymmetric anyway. So this is del J VK minus del K VJ times del J VK. You can see this in the second term by changing the order of indices. Replace K with J and J with K, then you see that this is minus this term, and this minus sign then gives a plus the same term again. Okay, so and as I said, I have to put the indices at the right place. So derivative del J upper is actually minus gradient. But there's another one of these guys here, so I can pull down the indices in both terms. And also I can do the same here with the with a K, and then it's del lower J V upper K. Okay. Yeah, because in each term I converted So here this del J, if I write both upper, I can also write both lower. So this would be this here. And here basically I pull down the K, which gives a minus sign, but I also pull down a J, which also gives a minus sign. So it's the same. Okay. So now the minus 1 half b squared minus h0 minus 1 half b squared. So it's minus 1 half this term here. So it's minus 1 over 2. Okay. And now comes the point. This derivative gives a factor ik or iq, depending which momentum variable you have. So it is I keep this in mind, it's q upper j. Okay, because this is the derivative with respect to the real x components, not the minus x components. No? Del lower j is the derivative with respect to the true upper x upper j. And including all the signs, it's a plus I q upper j. That comes from the derivative, from this derivative here. Okay. Okay, then I have a V, a Q, because I choose the Q now here, this derivative of V with a Q variable, upper K, minus Q upper K V upper J. Okay, and then there was a factor of I. Principle, I keep this in mind. There's a factor I, in principle, from the derivatives. Okay, and then I get also this del J VK. And now I use the K sum. Okay, and then it's another I, so I squared, so plus 1/2, K J VK, little k. Okay, don't be confused about the capital K, which is the momentum index, and J and K are just space-time indices. If you don't like it, you can also use I and J. But okay, no? So little k is the space-time index, capital K is the momentum index, momentum variable. And there's only one thing I still have to correct, because you see this is not dimensionless here. But of course, two powers of V give a factor of 1 over TV, and there's actually two powers of T squared still missing. And now the two powers of T squared in the denominator cancel the two powers of energy, Q here and K there, right? Okay. Is this understandable? Is this clear? Okay. Yeah, so it's most of the stuff is bookkeeping, so we have to just make sure you get the bookkeeping right. But we did everything correctly. This is the result, and now we just have to simplify it a little bit and then just compute it. It can be exactly computed because these are, in principle, shifted Gaussian integrals as before. However, with a small twist, so it's not what you think it would be. So you would think, okay, this is, here you see the pi integral, so there are pi, and here pi dot v. There's a shifted Gaussian integral, so I can change the variables and then get rid of the pi integral. Yeah, in principle, but careful. So there are some things which need to be taken into account to get the correct answer at the end. That's why we do this exercise. We will take a 10-minute break, until 15:15. Okay. Good. Wollen wir weitermachen? Okay. Gut. Okay. So now, here you see this, the whole space-time dependence is again in this factor, no? Which we already know. This is V over T times delta function, or Kronecker delta if it's discrete, K minus Q. No? Okay, so okay, there is a normalization. Integrals. And okay, I will pull out a factor minus 1/2 from everything. Okay. And now we have to collect terms. Okay, so there is a, so let's start with this one here. This one. So minus 1/2 is pulled out, so pi q. times v pi k. No? And I use this notation. I mean, maybe this is not the best notation, but I found it convenient for this application. So the standard, so standard scalar products, no, A dot B, you can also write as A transpose B. No? You remember this. And usually A transpose some matrix M, B, no, this is matrix multiplication. But if you want to keep this vector notation, I will use this notation with two dots on left and right. And then matrix in the middle, I give the matrix a double vector, left and right, which means to the right, it means that the column index has to be contracted with the row index of the B. And to the left, it means that the row index has to be contracted with a column index of the vector on the left. Naja, okay. So this unit matrix here is just here. Ne? Unit matrix means pi. So pi dot unit matrix dot pi means, of course, pi dot pi. Clear. Ne? Okay, so we have this guy. Okay, why is there another term? Well, there's this guy here. Ne? There's this extra term here. And there's a q, which is multiplied to the left with the pi, and the k multiplied to the right with the pi. That's why I changed the order of the terms here in the previous step. But the q is, of course, minus k. So there is actually a minus k here. This q is minus k on account of this delta, this Kronecker delta. No? So this minus 1 over 2, I pulled out already here. Ne? Minus 1/2 is already gone, minus 1/2. So there's just the plus m squared, and otherwise, it's k, k. This is a dyadic product. This is not a scalar product, k dot k. This k was the q, which is dotted into the pi on the left, the pi q on the left. And this k here is this k on the right, which is dotted into the pi k to the right. So this is really a matrix here, unit matrix, and then KK. So this is a matrix which has lots of non-vanishing components, no? KX, KX, KY, KX, KY, KX, KZ, and so forth. No? Dyadic product, it's called. Clear? Okay, so then we have taken this guy also. And then let's take this term here. Okay, so there is a minus times minus gives plus. But I pulled out a minus 1/2, so I have to have a minus 2. And then ik0 over t, this is just a prefactor. And then it's the pi q dotted into the vk. So this we have taken into account. And then we have just the last two terms here. No? Those have to be taken into account. So what do we have? So there's a minus 1/2, which is pulled out. So it's a plus. Okay, and then there must be a VQ on the left and a VK on the right. But what is in between? Of course, there is a matrix in between, because you see, because of this funny combination of indices. Here, the first term is qj kj, summed over j. So this is a scalar product q dot k, but q is minus k. So this is basically just minus k squared. This is minus kj. Minus k squared. OK, the minus 1/2 I pulled out already, so it's plus k squared over t squared. And here it's plus m squared over t squared. So if I introduce the energy in the standard way, Ek squared is k squared plus m squared, you see that this term plus this term gives just the standard Ek squared, OK, divided by t squared. Over all t squared. This is this term here. And then it's just vq times vk. So in principle, there's a unit matrix here in between. Because there's a vq dot 1 times vk. Clear? Understandable? This is this guy. But here it's different. This qk is dotted into the vk. This little index k, so there's a scalar product q dot v, but q is minus k, so minus k dot v. And this this v j is dotted into k. So there's a v dot k again, because sum over j, j index. So this vq is dotted into k, vector. Okay, so we take that into account. So there is, this is then minus k index, little k. This is a little bit stupid. Maybe I should have changed the index. I will do this in the script. Okay. So this minus times minus gives plus, but I pulled out minus 1/2. So there will be an overall minus. So I have to dot the k into the v. And this k into this v. So it's again a dyadic kk over t squared. OK? Yes? OK, good. That's it. Then we also have this guy. Yeah, good. Now this is shifted Gaussian, and we can compute. I want to simplify the notation a little bit. This matrix I call M, and this matrix I call N inverse. So I define matrix M as 1 plus kk over m squared. This is invertible. So M inverse exists. And matrix N inverse these matrices depend on 3 vector k. An inverse of 3 vector k I call E k squared times 1 minus kk over t squared. This is also invertible for any mass non-zero. For any non-zero mass, you can invert this. For zero mass, it does not work, because it involves a projection operator onto the space orthogonal to k vector. And then there's the one-dimensional space parallel to k vector has no component, and then you cannot invert it. But this is invertible. So invertible as long as m squared is not zero. So n matrix exists. The inverse of n inverse. Ah, good. Okay, so the notation n inverse already implied that some n exists, but I could have called this n, and then, of course, n inverse would exist. The reason why I define this as n inverse is it will simplify the rest. Okay. Good. So now, what do we have here? Let's just look at this stuff here with these definitions. Okay, so it's pi q m of k pi k minus, this term does not change, and here plus v q n inverse of k vk. Very compact. Very nice. So now you see, this is a shifted Gaussian, so I can define pi k prime as pi k minus I k0 over t m inverse of k dotted into v k, and the same for pi q. No? Pi q prime is pi q minus I q0 over t m inverse of q dotted into vq. But remember that k is minus q. So this I could also write as pi q plus I k0 over t. Okay, and m is quadratic in k, so if I replace k with, or q with minus k, the two signs will cancel. So this doesn't change. So I can also write this as m inverse k dq. Same matrix. Okay. Good. So then, let's compute the first two terms here, these two terms, in terms of the shifted variables. So the first two terms. I will just repeat this. Well, actually, I will not repeat. No, let me repeat this here. And then on the next board, I will introduce the shifted variables instead of the original pi's. Okay, so the m will still be here. And okay, so the pi k I can replace by pi k prime. I just have to put this term on the other side. Né? This minus I k zero blah 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 goes to the other side. So that's pi k prime plus I k0 over t m inverse of k dotted into ek. Good. The pi q can be replaced by pi q prime using this relation. So pi q prime. Just have to pull this to the other side. This term goes to the other side with a minus ik0, blah, blah, blah. Minus. Yeah. But now remember that multiplication from the left means actually transposition. So I should write this in a transposed way. That means this v goes to the left of the m inverse. Okay. Is this clear? Yeah, if this pi, this thing here was multiplying this matrix M from the left. So in principle, it's the transposed vector. Yeah? So I have to transpose also here. And this is good. This thing is not to the right, but it's all the way to the left. M is symmetric. Yeah? M is symmetric, M inverse is also symmetric, so it doesn't matter. There's no T on the M inverse here because it's symmetric. Okay, then this term here, the same holds here, né, for this term. Minus 2i k0 over T, and now I have to simply copy this here, né, because I already computed the appropriate transpose. Okay, ik0 over t dot vk. Okay, clear? Is this understandable? Okay, good. Now you just multiply it out. So you have pi q prime dot m dot pi k prime. This is this times this times this. Then you have this times this thing over there. So plus I k0 over t pi q prime, pi q prime, dot m inverse, which is 1, dot vk. This is this times this. Okay, then we have this term here times this term. So that is minus I k0 over t vq. This is this factor, isn't it? My I k0 over t. So vq m inverse times m times pi prime. M times m inverse is again 1, so I can drop it. So this would be this term times this term. And then the last guy is plus k0 squared over t squared, right? Because minus ik0 times plus ik0 is plus k0 squared. Okay, and then it's v dot m inverse dot m inverse is 1. Dot vk. Okay. And from the second line, I get minus 2i k0 over t pi q prime dot vk, this guy here. And then, okay, minus I plus I plus, and then times another minus 2 k0 squared over t squared vq dot m inverse of k dot vk. Good. Okay, and now you see that all the mixed terms cancel. No? The shift in the variable was just devised so to cancel the linear terms in pi. This guy here goes against one of these here. Okay. So there's one guy missing here. This will cancel this here because you can change the variables. There's a sum over k and q. So in principle, I could call the q sum I could call k, and the k sum I could call q. So in principle, I could call this k, and in principle, I call this q. Then this would be minus I q naught. But because of the, because k goes into minus q. But, so this here, plus I k zero is minus I q naught. But because of the delta function, this is also plus I k naught. Now you say it's plus I k naught pi q prime dot vk, which is exactly this guy here, scalar product of these two vectors. Overall, there should be a difference in sign. I think I made one mistake here. Okay, so let's do it including this here. Minus I q naught is plus, minus I k naught is plus I q naught. Yeah, this is stupid.
Don't we change the sign in our delta function? I mean, we're renaming them, right?
Yeah, just renaming. That doesn't matter. So this is minus I key, minus I. So see, this cancels one of these.
If we are renaming them, then yeah. Q naught is K zero.
Ah, yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
Get the last.
Yes, that's the point. That's right. So so if you rename it, this should be minus I Q zero, which is plus I K naught. That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Max. Yeah. So these guys cancel. No? So first you just rename k0 into q0, but then you use the delta function to make it into, to flip the sign. So this is also plus, so this cancels the rest. Okay. Yeah. Of course, it must be correct. Except my explanation was a little bit less good. Okay, and this guy here, also one of these guys cancels, of course, the two here. No? So this is now really something which is pi prime squared, which you need for a Gaussian integral. And then there's some remainder, which goes into the V integration. OK, fine. So that takes care of the first two terms here. And there's only this V, N inverse V term that we still have in the exponent that we have to take care of. Okay, so now we put everything together. Of course, the pi prime integral, so the Jacobian is 1. So the pi prime integral, that will decouple. So there is a pi prime q m of k pi prime k. This was the decoupling trick. And then there's another integral over V. And that has, okay. That has two terms. Okay, I have to write it here because I'm running out of space. Sorry, so there is actually a V, Q, and then there are two terms. There is the N inverse here from before. And then this extra term here, no? Minus k naught squared over t squared m inverse. And then dot vk and parenthesis closed. Okay. Up to here, everything is good, no? You completely agree with me, no? That this is correct result. So why is this, why does this look so complicated? It's all because of this elimination of the unphysical degrees of freedom. And you can also see that you cannot simply absorb this here into a constant, right? I mean, this is a Gaussian integral, but it's not a constant because it's still the determinant of m that you have to take into account for the final result. You cannot just throw this away. So it's really subtle. Don't just kick it out and think it has no further role. It plays a role, as you will see in a second. So the result is, up to some factors of whatever pi, what you have, I don't know, so absorb all of them in some normalization. This here, this Gaussian integral, gives you a determinant of m, 3 by, in k space, and in 3 by 3 space, because m is a 3 by 3 matrix for every k. To the power minus 1/2, no, as usual, no, the Gaussian integral is 1 over square root or so. No? 1 over the square root of the determinant of m. And then, okay, I skip over the tricks, no, the usual trick with the shuffling the minus q column in the right place. So the minus q and the q will be exchanged so that this thing looks like a diagonal matrix, blah, blah, blah. This, the same tricks we did for the scalar field are done here as well. Yeah, but keep in mind there's a determinant of m which you don't want to throw away. And here, this is also Gaussian. Eh? Same tricks, minus q and q exchanged. Of course, this gives also infinitely many minus signs when you in a determinant when you change two columns, but there's some normalization constant here. Okay, so this is the determinant of this guy here, no? That you have to take into account with a factor minus 1/2. So there's also a determinant, again in k space and in 3 by 3 space, because this is also 3 by 3 for every k. N inverse of k minus k naught squared over t squared m inverse of k to the power minus 1/2. Great. So, of course, these constants will now be dropped up to constants, irrelevant constants. All the irrelevant constants I will drop now. As usual, no, in these calculations. So irrelevant means temperature independent constants. Okay. So now, what is this? Okay, so all of these matrices are diagonal in K. No? They never mix any K1 with a K2 or whatever. So the determinant over K space is just a product over all K. And now you just have to compute a 3x3 determinant. And determinant A times determinant B is determinant A times B. No? So you have to compute the determinant of M times N inverse minus K naught squared over T squared M times M inverse, which is 1. 3x3, 1. No? And then everything to the power minus 1/2. Good. So the last thing you have to do is you have to compute this guy. So 1 plus kk dyadic product over m squared times dk squared times 1 over t squared minus kk over t squared. Yeah? This was the definition of M and the definition of N inverse. Okay. So it's EK squared over T squared times 1. This is this here times this here. Then 1 times this guy, so it's minus KK over T squared. This times this. It is plus EK squared over M squared T squared KK. It's this here times this here. Okay, and here you see this K dot this K gives again a K squared. No? So this the column K and the row K together is just scalar product of K with K. But the 1K here and 1K here remain, so there's again a structure which is KK, but it's minus K squared over M squared T squared KK. So one KK structure survives. The left guy here, the rightmost guy here, the other two are contracted to K squared. And then the remainder are just the terms in the denominator. Okay, now you remember this is k squared plus m squared, right? Ek squared. And you see that this k squared cancels this guy, and this remaining m squared cancels this guy. And then this cancels also. Good. Great. Everything is fine. The final answer is, but now it's diagonal. No? Diagonal 1 means just the determinant is a product of three identical terms. So it's just EK squared minus K0 squared. This EK squared minus K0 squared over T squared to the power minus 3 over 2. Because you have three identical terms. And this is the same result as for the scalar field, except a power of 3 more. Because I have 3 scalar degrees of freedom in one vector, in one massive vector field. So my log z naught is minus 3/2 sum over k log EK squared minus K0 squared over T squared. And this is the expected result, because it's basically 3 times the result for one scalar field, one real scalar field. And this is as it should be, because you have three physical degrees of freedom in this massive vector field. Yeah? And it's non-interacting, so nothing out of the ordinary. Massive vector has three independent degrees of freedom, DOFs. Massive vector field, okay, sorry. Yeah. And in this Matsubara sum you evaluate as usual, no? I mean, I don't repeat. This thing here, this sum you have computed, this Matsubara sum. It gives you the standard expression for the pressure, no? of a Bose gas. And then it's just a factor three. So each degree of freedom of the massive vector field contributes one times what the one scalar field, the neutral scalar was. One real, meaning neutral scalar. Okay. And of course, if you had included the charge, then you can also have Bose-Einstein condensation and stuff like that. There's a chemical potential, but basically you would have one neutral and one degree with plus mu and one degree with minus mu as for the charge scalar. I excluded this. I said mu equal to zero because the real complication is to account for the non-trivial integrals when you do the pi. The non-trivial pi integration is what makes this more complicated. Yeah? But if you really keep everything and don't make any mistake, you also get the correct answer. If you start to throw things away before the end of the calculation, not a good idea. Okay. So I have a small addendum to this result. Of course, you can also do this much more elegantly. And I think it's also worth to discuss this, although I will be a little bit briefer. I cannot finish this today, but I will finish it then on Tuesday. But I will give you some, well, let's see how far we get. There will be some homework exercises involved. I don't let you get away without any homework. But I think we will not get there before I have to close today. So the homework will be given then on Tuesday for next Friday or whenever you like to do it. You will see that this more elegant way gives also the correct answer. And, it's a little simpler because this discussion is very similar to the way we discussed the electromagnetism, because there was this so-called complete gauge fixing calculation and it was also horribly complicated. Or there was the elegant covariant formulation. And this is very, very similar. So this complete fixed gauge is analogous to this, although there's no gauge degree of freedom. There's explicit elimination of unphysical degrees of freedom. That was this. The more elegant way is to promote the V0 field to a physical degree of freedom, and then at the end of the calculation, send it to an unphysical degree again. And this is this way. Okay, I should also say why 3 degrees of freedom vector fields have spin 1. So it's spin plus, spin 0, and spin z component of spin minus 1. This is where the 3 comes from. But we have discussed this before. Okay, so now the alternative is with the Stückelberg Lagrangian. This is also something that was invented for QED, or electromagnetism. The idea is the following. L0 is the standard kinetic term, the standard mass term. And then, something that in the quantum field theory course we called gauge fixing part for the Lagrangian. This is, of course, the same here. So in the electromagnetic theory, we introduced this to promote one of the degrees of freedom to a physical degree of freedom. Actually, yeah, in some sense, we had four more or less physical ones, but then we had to introduce extra things to Gupta-Bleuler quantization or whatever to get rid of the remaining, to get finally rid of all the unphysical degrees of freedom. Here, this trick just promotes the V0 to a dynamical degree of freedom. And later on, we will send lambda to zero to go back to the correct result. This is all. This is the trick. This was actually invented for QED, the Stückelberg thing. And then you not only have to send lambda to zero, but also this mass term to zero to recover electromagnetism. So if I send both of them to zero, then I go back to electromagnetic quantization of electromagnetic fields. And that can also be done. Yeah? So Stückelberg did this for electromagnetism. We use this for the Broca theory. And there, of course, this is always finite, much better, or non-zero. And then at the end of the day, we just send lambda to zero. OK. Equations of motion. Yeah, how do they look like? As usual, Euler-Lagrange. Euler-Lagrange. Okay. V appears only in one term. This is this guy here. Okay, clear. This guy is what we had before. So del mu of minus f mu nu. Yeah, this is what we had before when you take the derivative of this guy. So I'm not going through all the little steps, but you remember this, I guess. But now there's another term here. There's also a derivative of V, namely if mu equals nu, right? If both are the same, then you see here is also, if you like, this is del alpha V alpha. No? So there is also a contribution from the last term. And how does this look like? Okay, so it's minus. Okay, because of the square, the factor of 1/2 is cancelled, minus lambda. And then the chain rule tells you there's 1 power of del dot V. And then there's a contribution if mu equals nu. Mu equals nu. So G mu nu. Let's check. You can write this as del 0 V 0 minus, so plus del I V I. So this is just resolving the del alpha V alpha, okay, which is del 0 V 0 lower minus del I V I lower. If I raise, I lower the indices. Okay, so why now g mu nu? Okay, if mu equals nu equals 0, then the g mu nu gives a plus 1, correct? If mu equals nu some spatial index, like little I here, lower I, it's minus 1. That's also correct, because g mu nu has minus, minus, minus in the spatial components. Okay. Okay, then you just, we can skip this one step and just multiply with minus 1 and take m squared on the other side. So it's plus del mu f mu nu plus m squared v nu. This is what we had before. And now plus lambda del mu lower times g mu nu is del nu upper of d dot v. Okay? And this we can also write in a different way. Remember, this is box plus m squared times v nu minus del nu del dot v. This is what we had before from this. But there's now also another del nu del dot v because of the extra lambda. Né? Okay? Okay, I think I should close, but let me just make the final conclusion. If you take the four divergence of this here, so I take del nu of this, and then the four divergence del nu is box. Then you see, the box del dot v cancels with minus this one here. Né? But this here cancels this here. So it's basically m squared plus lambda box del dot v equals zero. Or if you divide by lambda, box plus m squared over lambda, this is important, that's why I show it, equals zero. Or if you like, you can pull out lambda, okay. Lambda times del dot v. So this is the Klein-Gordon equation for a field lambda del dot v with mass m squared over lambda. So now the fourth degree of freedom is physical. No? It fulfills, you cannot simply replace V0 by some combination of V vector, because there is another degree of freedom for a field. We will see that this lambda del dot V is actually pi 0 for field lambda del dot phi with mass m squared over lambda. Yeah, so there is a fourth degree of freedom, and it will have a mass m squared. Mass squared will be m squared over lambda. So the mass will be m over square root of lambda. If you send lambda to zero at the end of the day, actually with mass square root, so it's m over square root lambda, this goes to infinity if lambda goes to zero. So you will, at the end of the calculation, you will remove this extra degree of freedom from the spectrum of physical excitations. No? It will become infinitely heavy. That means it's not dynamical. It will be gone. There's no contribution to the thermodynamic properties at the end of the calculation. No? So this is the Stückelberg trick. At the end of the calculation, basically remove it from the physical spectrum of excitations. Okay, sorry, I was going a little over time. If you have no questions, I wish you a nice weekend and see you Tuesday.